Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, the issue of qualified immunity for law enforcement has been in the news in the past weeks since new state legislation removed it. In the past, qualified immunity has protected police officers from lawsuits. The removal of it now allows them to be sued for misconduct. But qualified immunity is still a federal policy. Colorado's new law only impacts police officers accused of violating state law. Well, one family in Boulder knows all about qualified immunity. It has been used as a defence by the Boulder County Sheriff's Office and other employees in a lawsuit brought by Ryan Partridge. In 2016, Ryan was in and out of the Boulder jail, and during a psychotic episode, he gouged out his own eyes. This all happened while he was in custody, and the lawsuit brought against the jail and other county employees said more should have been done to protect him because they knew that he was schizophrenic. We'll hear from Ryan and his parents and what life is like now and why more people need to pay attention to these issues. The Navajo Nation is still devastated from the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll hear from one woman in Longmont who has been helping and who is still asking for donations, monetary donations, as well as supplies for the children who have seen so many people die in their families. We'll hear from you, the listener, on the comment line. Then after headlines from the BBC at the bottom of the hour, it's time for science. And today we'll have How on Earth. At 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts running out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled on Monday that states can mandate that Electoral College voters must vote for the winner of a state's popular vote in presidential elections. In 2016, 10 of the 538 presidential electors tried to vote for someone other than their pledged candidate in an attempt to stop Donald Trump from taking the presidency. The Supreme Court was ruling on a case from Colorado where several electors tried to vote for Republican John Kasich instead of Hillary Clinton, who won the state's popular vote. One of the electors, Michael Baca, was removed by state officials from his role as an elector. Baca brought a lawsuit against the state, arguing that electors are free agents with the power to vote for whomever they choose. The Supreme Court ruling overturns a 2019 ruling from a court of appeals in Denver, which said that the state of Colorado had in fact acted outside of the bounds of its constitutional power when it was punishing faithless electors. Paul Smith with the Campaign Legal Center, which filed a brief supporting Colorado's law, says electors could be influenced in other ways if states weren't allowed to rein them in.
There's no conflict of interest rules. There's no disclosure rules. They could be getting paid by the Russians. None of that would be illegal. And so that was just one of the arguments that was made to the court about how we really ought to keep the electors as mere placeholders, figureheads who just vote the way the state voted.
Wilfred Codrington, a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, says the Electoral College is in fact undemocratic. In the past two decades, for instance, two presidents have won the Electoral College vote, but not the popular vote. But Codrington says the justices did not touch that issue. Instead, they made a narrow decision about faithless electors.
It patches up what was a crack in the Electoral College. There's many arguments about the problems with the Electoral College, and this was one of them.
Colorado is still seeing elevated numbers of coronavirus cases. The Denver Post reports that for a third consecutive week, the state's COVID-19 hospitalizations have begun to creep upward for the first time in months. While the state is not seeing surges at the rate of other states like Arizona and Florida, the number of positive cases has climbed since the first week of June, according to figures released by the state health department. The process for renaming the Stapleton neighborhood in Denver is underway. The group responsible for choosing Stapleton's new name will meet today, tomorrow and Thursday as they begin the process of whittling down more than 300 suggested new names to a shortlist of 8. The Denverite reports that delegates voted last month to move forward with changing the neighborhood's name. This comes after decades of efforts to remove the name. The neighbourhood was named for former Denver Mayor Benjamin Stapleton, who was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. The goal of the advisory board is to announce a new name by August. The city of Aurora will take a committee approach to the investigation into the death of Elijah McClain. The 23-year-old black man died at the hands of police last August. The Aurora Sentinel reports that at last night's city council meeting, council members heard that the committee would include experts on civil rights, the criminal justice system and medical assistance in police calls. That is because ketamine was administered to McClain by Aurora Fire Rescue. The city had earlier cancelled an agreement with a Connecticut-based attorney and former police officer who had been hired to re-examine the case. That agreement was cancelled due to concerns over bias. Governor Jared Polis has formally appointed State Attorney General Phil Weiser as a special prosecutor in the case that took place on June 26th. However, that investigation will operate completely separately from the City of Aurora's investigation. In the weather today, hot and sunny. Expect highs in the mid-90s with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Clearer skies for Wednesday. Sunny skies ahead for Wednesday and Thursday. Highs still in the mid-90s and it might get close to 100 degrees for Friday and Saturday. It is 12 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. It is a parent's worst nightmare to know that your child is sick, in need of treatment, but to see him not get that treatment. And that's especially difficult when it's mental health treatment that's needed. Well, that's the experience of the Partridge family in Boulder. Their son, Ryan, was diagnosed with schizophrenia in 2016. And like many people dealing with mental health issues, he ended up not getting the treatment he needed. Rather, he ended up incarcerated. Here's his father, Richard Partridge.
He was in jail for approximately 181 days in jail for a misdemeanor. And of course, most of that time was prior to be found even guilty of that misdemeanor. He was what you would call a pretrial detainee. And in that time period, especially starting in February of 2016, he became more ill, more irrational behavior, more of a problem at the jail. He spent a lot of time in solitary confinement. He was denied all activities with other prisoners, groups that they have, different activities that they do. He was isolated. Even at one time period in, I don't know the month, they took his mattress away, his blanket. They shut off his water.
I think I was in disciplinary around 55 days out of my time there. And I never made a phone call or took a shower while I was in disciplinary. I was in my cell behind an airlock door that's called a sub-day room for the majority of my time.
Well, Ryan did spend about 40 days, starting about April 2016, in the Colorado Mental Health Institution at Fort Logan. This was after an earlier episode at the jail where he broke off 9 of his teeth on a toilet bowl. That was while he was in special management at the Boulder County Jail. But after his time there at Fort Logan, he was back in the jail in the fall, and there were 2 incidences of suicide attempts, including a jump from a second tier in isolation where he injured himself after he landed on his back.
And they just did not keep him safe.
So they took him to the hospital and did a CAT scan or something, but then they took him back to jail. And it was just very difficult getting information. I found out through the attorney he had at the time, and I went over to the hospital. And they didn't want me to see him. I was afraid of upsetting him, you know, and him becoming agitated. So then he was in, when he went back to the jail, where were you then after the jump?
They kept me in a cell that they could watch me for a while and then back.
Because
back to isolation.
Because the mental health care worker then approached him with a release that if he would sign it, saying that this was attention-getting behavior, this was not psychotic behavior or mental illness, then she could get him out. So that happened.
Some of the mental health workers, in their depositions under oath, said, well, we didn't know if it was a behavioral problem or a mental health issue. And we've only given you a few examples of over a time period of 2 or 3 years with different misdemeanor incarcerations Ryan went through. They all knew he had schizophrenia. People don't hear voices and talk to people that aren't there without having schizophrenia.
Well, Richard Partridge says one of the main issues was the fact that Ryan was refusing medication. He was so far into his mental illness while he was incarcerated at the Boulder County Jail. He didn't trust anybody who was working there. And one of the issues is that at the Boulder County Jail, they won't give medication involuntarily.
One of the problems at the Boulder County Jail, it's a policy. As an example, the Denver County Jail has made mandatory and voluntary medication as part of their jail policy. The Boulder County Jail does not force medication. We had doctors willing to write the prescriptions. We were willing, I have guardianship saying, medicate him. They did not medicate him. And they knew, they have a jail psychiatrist who did diagnose him, I believe it was April of that year, of having schizophrenia, and they ordered some medication. I was in Mexico at the time, and Shelley was here, but we were not aware of the abuse going on during that time period at the jail.
We were also not told that he had been diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Well, Ryan does have memories of that time, despite his mental state, while he was in the jail in 2016.
I remember the bulk of it. There's a few things that I, you know, some things I learned the sequence better of by going through the paperwork, the legal paperwork and documents. But I remember the bulk of it. The only things that were real traumatic to the point that I don't really equate remembering or the time continuum was I was in the chair one time for 10 hours. And that was right before I did my eyes out a couple of days. So yeah, it's called a restraint chair, and it's kind of low on the continuum of force, but in reality, your arms are secured to your sides or to the sides of you, and a lot of times they put a sock, like a spit sock, over your head, and then you're in your cell behind a sublocked door in discipline areas where that was held. I was in the chair for about 10 hours that time. I was in it 4 or 5 times total, if you include transport. There's now, they use cameras on it, but when I was in there, they didn't have one. That wasn't a requirement at the time.
In depositions, they said the longest anyone could remember, and some of the people have been there over 20 years, said that they never remember anybody being in a restraint chair for more than 2 hours. Now, Ryan doesn't remember a lot of times, but he was tased or a stun gun numerous, numerous times while he was in the Boulder County Jail, sometimes through the cell, sometimes in a restraint chair.
Well, ultimately, Ryan gouged out his eyes. He blinded himself while he was in the Boulder County Jail. And Richard, his father, shares how they heard the news.
I had been talking to different jailers, Shelley especially, and health workers, and the man who runs the jail, his name is Getz. He's been there 20 years. And he called me up and nonchalantly told me that Ryan had gouged out his eyes and maybe they could save one of them, and he was in the Denver hospital.
It took me a good 10 days to realize I was blind. that I had blinded myself. I was stayed at the Denver General Hospital for 2 weeks, and then I went to Pueblo, I don't know what they call that, mental health facility. And I was there for a couple weeks, and then I got out, and my dad picked me up from there. And I remember that.
After he did this in his cell, they didn't immediately attend to him either.
They saw blood coming out of his eyes. They saw it turn to clotting. They waited 2.5 hours to call for an ambulance. 2.5 hours.
Well, the Partridge family have brought a lawsuit against the Boulder County Jail. However, as a defence, the Boulder County Sheriff's Department and the other folks who are named in the lawsuit are using qualified immunity as a defence. Now, that is something that has been removed from state cases if there is a violation of state law. But this is a federal case, and because it's a federal policy, the removal of qualified immunity in Colorado does not impact this. Now, qualified immunity was created by the Supreme Court in 1967, and it is a commonly used defense that can shield government officials, most commonly law enforcement officers, from civil suits. However, the Partridge family have still brought that suit, and they're still waiting for resolution.
And initially in the complaint, we had 22 people, I believe, named in the complaint. Now it's gone to the judge who actually will hear the case. Her name is Arguello. And she gave basically everybody qualified immunity, including the mental health workers. So our case, basically now, we have about 7 incidences of excessive force, which we can prove. Everything that we are alleging in the depositions, we could prove in front of the jury with no question. But this qualified immunity, and one of the things that was frustrating to me is they asked for qualified immunity right in the beginning. And when they get it, that means then they don't want any evidence at all to even be presented. They basically try to exclude all evidence because there's qualified immunity. Well, our legal team did quite a bit of posturing and maneuvering and came back. And after doing depositions and having real evidence, we petitioned the judge, which we're waiting on a ruling now, to dismiss some of her dismissals, because now she can at least base it on evidence.
Well, Ryan is now at home. He is permanently blind. He lives with his parents, but he is doing well. He is on his medication. And Shelley says she's just glad that he's alive.
Well, he's been a joy at home.
He was offered medication in pill form, but at that point he was not in his right mind, and he did not trust them.
I was only offered it once or twice at my cell door in isolation, and I didn't really know what it was for. I don't think I was taking my blood pressure pills at that point either. I wasn't taking anything.
Ryan has a cardiac thing too, and he should not be tased.
Well, they are getting on with their life. Ryan now is living with being permanently blind. And the Partridge family are still waiting for their day in court around this civil case. The Boulder Weekly has written extensively about it. You can read the latest installment in this week's Boulder Weekly, boulderweekly.com. But in terms of what they would like other people to know, mental illness is something that is often not treated, and people need to be aware that this can happen to anyone. Here's Ryan Partridge with his final thoughts.
It can happen to almost anyone, certainly to someone that we all know that is at risk for violence from the police. And I think that,
we wanted to kind of give a shout out. Mental Health Partners in Boulder has been wonderful, wonderful to us. We live in the neighborhood of them, and Dr. Leone is Ryan's psychiatrist there. You know, they're overworked, underpaid. We should put more money there. They serve so many people.
Our hearts go out to everybody fighting a battle like this or another, and it happened to anybody. I'm sure we all know people out there that are at risk for this. There needs to be systemic change.
And the Partridge family are also encouraging people who are concerned about what has happened in his case, but other cases that have been highly publicized at the jail, they say that the county commissioners have a big role to play in this, and they urge people to contact the Boulder County Commissioners. We'll put photos and more information about Ryan Partridge and his parents, Shelley and Richard, online at news.kgnu.org. It's 8:26. It's time now for the comment line.
Well, hello. I was just hoping that the AM radio line could be restored. I'm not sure what's going on, but it's down yet again. Believe me, we miss you. Please keep the contacts open. Thank you.
This is my comment about Rob's show last night on Hemispheres. Wow, what a show. You guys said it all in an hour. Let me summarize. The Middle East is a giant porta potty. The United States, run by colonial imbeciles, has rubbed on the doorknob. The pot is full, and the Russians are sitting on the sideline with a huge pump truck ready to clean up the mess, and they have a warehouse full of toilet paper. Meanwhile, the Muslim Brotherhood is waiting on the sideline with rubber gloves, ready to open up the outhouse and let the Russians clean it up. While the United States lies mired in the biggest economic disaster capitalism has ever faced, at least my old age won't be boring. Great job last night. Now it's time for my morning coffee. Bill Conklin.
Sunday night BBC broadcast. Once again, it starts out with in the middle of the cast, Netter Air Studio, with loud rapping music, or not rapping, but rock and roll music on there, right over the broadcast of the BBC, and it's happened quite a bit. You do a good job, though. Thank you.
Hello. It is so great to hear La Luce Sigue. I do not always listen to the radio, and it had been very long since I had heard it. Hopefully it has been on every other Monday evening, but I had forgotten that. Leo Group Ruiz, and please forgive me, I've forgotten the name of the lady who reads with him. Great material that they bring to us. This current session was regarding the racism against the indigenous peoples, the American Indians of various tribes, and the U.S. Wrongly taking over. I was astounded. I believe that Leo said it was half of Mexico's original territory in 1848. They moved the river. The Mexican government in the 1800s had agreed that a certain river would be the boundary between the U.S. and Mexico. And the U.S. wrongly said, no, it's this other river further south, which somewhat had a similar name. It was a very interesting story, and I'd never heard it before. And I'm sure it's factual. You can tell I liked it. It's great. Best wishes to all at KGNU and all the listeners.
I would like to thank KGNU for Monday night's program of La Lucha Sigue. La Lucha Sigue, the struggle continues. The program was historically interesting and extremely informative. And I enjoyed it very much, and I'm sure other people did too. La Lucha Sigue, the struggle continues. Stay in the street and plant some trees.
Another wild ride tonight getting into the BBC after 5 o'clock, and the sounds coming out over it had nothing to do with the BBC, but it finally came on. This is July 1st. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Theo Earhart. I just had to say to someone that the clip show last night said it all, and it was the best of. It was the best church I could have gone to. It was the best philosophy I could have gone to. It had the if everyone listened and heard the show last night, we would all be in so much better a place. Anyway, it was a wonderful show, and I just had to bubble over with my enthusiasm and share that. Thank you.
Hi, I just heard Frank Thayer interviewing John from the Boulder Chamber of Commerce, and John was saying how we're very concerned about, because of COVID, that some of our character small businesses, the businesses that characterize Boulder as Boulder, are having to shut down and close. And I'm just wondering about that because, you know, a year ago, a lot of our character small businesses, the businesses that are really signify Boulder, were having to shut down because of high rents that were recently forced on them because of new landlords moving into Boulder and just raising rents out of the blue. And the Chamber of Commerce didn't seem to be so upset about that. So I just want all of us to think twice about, you know, our motives and how we can really change that and really be supportive of local small businesses.
And that is the comment line. 303-447-9911 is the number to call.